Well, hello, witches. Welcome to another episode of Hex Rated, where I, Blackbird, and my good friend Scarlet are going to talk all about her journey to a regional burn, or Burning Man, as you might already be aware. Anyway, I know very little about this culture, so I kind of interviewed her about her experience, and I hope you love this episode. Thank you, as always, for listening. I put a spell on you.
Because you're mine. Because you're mine. Stop the things you do.
Well, fuck it, whatever. I can fix it. I can fix it.
One, two, oh shit. That was the best countdown I've ever heard.
For you anything. Know, I can't get shit together. I've been working all day, sweating up a
shit
storm
together,
at this
put it in a
laptop.
Backpack so it's together. Take it to a shit museum.
Get your shit in a backpack. I don't care. Go to the shit store.
Just get your shit together.
Have you watched the new season yet?
No, I haven't. I got really burned out on Rick and Morty just because of all the fan backlash kind of bullshittery.
And yeah, but like, it's still fucking fun.
God, it's. I need to go back and watch it from the beginning because sometimes I forget how truly brilliant it.
We're rewatching the last season just to remember because it's like they're so funny, but I forget. Like, I have individual moments that I remember, but not the entire episode. So. We're rewatching last season before we start the new one. So,
nice.
But yeah, definitely.
Sure says bitch a lot.
Yeah. Hey.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm trying to catch up on TV time here. We binged The Great, the third season, in 2 days, and it was in fact great. I'm really impressed that they keep the premise kind of rolling, but it's a delight.
We have not watched that.
I strongly recommend it. Nicholas Holt is like having the best time ever.
That's good.
Hilarious.
Oh, I like that. I want people to have fun.
Yes. Oh, and I'm not familiar with the actress that plays Aunt Elizabeth, who is highly fictionalized. But she's hilarious. We need more, slightly past middle age women who are not trying to be pretty young things, but are still very sexual. And kooky and weird and like at this point in their life where they're just sort of like, fuck it, I don't give a shit.
I mean, can I act? You tell me.
Yes.
Because
yes.
I have never thought I was an actress, but I will give it a go if it means a career in luxury. That's what I'm saying.
Well, I strongly recommend checking it out.
Anyone out there talent hiring for Sea Hag or Bog Witch, please consider me. Please. I can be a sexual sea witch. Don't worry.
Yes.
Hi. So I am Blackbird.
I am Scarlet.
We are Hex Rated. And we talk about witchcraft and many, many other things.
Yeah. Also TV time. Oh, my gosh. I don't want to
get into
it. Witchcraft
is actually the predominant subject. But yes, we finished The Diplomat. Holy shit. So great.
Oh, so good. It's really good.
So
you
good.
Know what's
really good.
Not good. Third season of Ted Lasso. Ted Lasso was a surprise hit for us because I don't like football or soccer, but it was a very charming program. And then this third season has gone completely off the rails. It totally seems like they're making it up as they go along.
I need to know why everybody hates this season because, as always, I am delighted.
So bad.
I have very. What?
Everything about it is bad.
Oh, I disagree. But I know the internet's dragging it pretty hard, so all right. I will like what I like. Shamelessly. So it still makes me laugh and gives me a fun time. But I was not thrilled with this last episode with the ending. So I mean, it was kinda like not just the content, but just the way they did it. So yes, I agree. It is not as good as the first two seasons, but it's okay. I still like everybody. Anyway, We also we're almost finished with the new season of Queer Eye, which, you know,
I do not watch, but I heard it's very emotional.
If you do not like crying, do not watch it. It is so good. They are just five fabulous motherfuckers that go in and, you know, just fix you in every category. Dressing, hair and makeup, personality, fucking cooking. Like, they will fix your shit. It's heartwarming. You should watch it.
Okay.
What you got any more?
I think I'm okay on TV Corner for now.
Okay, TV Corner,
because
good.
Because we are still on
Hockey Corner. Hockey Corner. I'm not even gonna just going. Cross those fingers, bitch. That's right.
That's right. Okay, well.
Yes.
Now that we've talked about several things that involve spoilers or people do not care about.
That's true.
I have an update from last week.
Oh, go.
So I had several homework assignments or science experiments to get on. And I haven't done most of those. The experiments that I remember mentioning are, one, using a red hot needle to burn my jet beads on my 1870 or 1897 morning gown to see if they're real jet. They should smell like coal if they are. I haven't tried that yet.
I need to know.
And then the other experiment was to induce an electric charge in my tourmaline, yes. Which I have had trouble finding good advice on how to actually do that, because everything about charging it is like, leave it under the moon of the
no that's not what we're talking about.
No, I was like, no, I want it to literally be electrically charged,
like a charge. So not I need it cleansed.
No, I don't. Right.
No.
But the other thing I was talking about was taking a chunk of tourmaline and taking a chunk of selenite and playing with the two of them, because structurally they're very similar. They both grow in these like tall, long filaments of crystal. And to me, they almost kind of look like a bundle of like fiber optic cables or something.
Oh, yeah.
So since they both have this very conductive, very like two-way sort of funneling, sort of very, when we talked about tourmaline, I used a lot of words that had to do with like technology, because to me it very much has that flavor of sort of transporting energy efficiently or converting types of information or knowledge or energy into other types.
Like,
and
it's,
I feel
very
like
active.
When you handle these stones, you totally get that impression. But of course, selenite is kind of white or clear, and when polished has this beautiful luster to it, kind of like a cat's eye or tiger's eye sort of luster. And it's softer than tourmaline, but it fractures into these like little thin filaments. And then tourmaline, same thing, it has these sort of long thin crystal structures to it, but it is black. And selenite, as the name would imply, Selene, the Greek goddess of the moon, has a very lunar, sort of silvery, airy, celestial, sort of maybe angelic if you're into that shit, sort of vibe. Tourmaline, it, like we said, is for grounding and protection and the earth. And so I put my big chunk of tourmaline at my feet and laid down and kind of got into a meditative state. And of course it felt like what we had described, the sort of like sort of sucking grounding feeling, the idea of like, you know, when lightning strikes the ground, it is basically creating, it's returning a neutral ionization to the atmosphere by discharging into the ground and grounding that, literally grounding that electricity.
Check.
So that's kind of what I felt like. It almost felt like, you know, in a massage, sometimes if they like sort of pick up your ankles and sort of just shake your legs out a little bit, kind of give you like, so that you feel like you're sort of taking some pressure off your lower back maybe, in your hip flexors. It kind of felt like that almost.
Ooh, I need this.
Right. And so then later, so then I did just selenite at my head, and it was kind of as expected. I felt like a breeze, like a coolness, but I felt like a stretching, like almost like taffy or marshmallow. And so in a feeling of the direction of up. So, of course, that was sort of what I would have expected. So then I did both of them at the same time.
And
it felt great. It was so refreshing. Oh my God. So the trance state I was in was kind of like, I feel very alert in my brain, but my body is like completely at rest. And I can basically tune out the feeling of my body and just sort of feel like I'm floating. And then I can hone in on certain senses if I'd like to, or I could kind of remain in this sort of astral or disembodied state. So that being the case, I was sort of in that state, but I felt very alert. I felt very refreshed, and so it totally felt like there was like a channel from like the ground energy to celestial energy. So funneling energy up through my body that needs to go up, funneling energy down that needs to go down, things that need to be expelled up into the cosmos were going, things that need to come into me from the cosmos were coming in. Same thing with the earth, kind of grounding, protecting earth energy coming up, and grounding excess energy that needs to go back into the ground. So that felt, I felt like my sinuses cleared up temporarily for a minute.
Oh, wow. Really?
So, and my breathing has been kind of, I've had a really itchy throat for the past couple of days because my allergies have just been out of control. So that all, like the kind of like asthmatic tightness in my chest. So anyway, it felt pretty great. And then just for the contrast, I switched it and I did the tourmaline at top and the selenite at the bottom, and it felt weird. It felt like compressing. Not bad. Yeah. But of course, this is all sort of psychosomatic because I'm laying on the floor on the second floor of my house. So I'm not actually even oriented to the earth, to the sky. I'm not touching the floor, literally. So this is all sort of
happening in your mind. Right.
So it would be interesting to I think play around with that some more, and like play around with actually having it like standing up and being grounded and be actually be, you know, perpendicular to the surface of the earth and the axis of gravity. And then also try these other things where like I have where I'm orienting the crystals as up and down, but I'm facing the other way, or, you know, I'm turned to north and south, or, you know, so just play around with it or see if I can switch the flow of directions mentally, like in my head mentally switch which one is quote unquote top and which one's bottom or whatever. So I said that I was going to play around with that, and I did. And the results are I have more things I want to play around with.
Well, in that case, I also have a follow-up because I went rock crazy, bitch. I bought some shit. So, you know, as I was saying, all I had was my really, you know, one piece of obsidian that's really, I didn't really have a whole lot of other stuff. I have some quartz, but that's about it. I lost all my rocks in the fire. I'm just kidding. But I did. My crystals have been long gone, so... Anyway, I bought a big tower of selenite. Not when I say big, it's about 6 inches. So that's, you know, pretty good size. I got a pretty good chunk, like a palm sized chunk of green calcite. I got a really cool, super interesting piece of amber that looks like a little dinosaur, doesn't it? Like it's shaped like a little animal.
It looks like a little creepy dried chicken foot or something.
Okay. We can go with that. Dried chicken foot. I don't see any fossilized anything in there. And then I got a raw piece of onyx, untumbled or whatever you want to call it. Natural, raw. I got a tumbled piece of onyx, and my black tourmaline will be here tomorrow. So...
Ooh.
Yeah. Oh, here's my, sorry. We're showing and telling. That's my green calcite. But so I've been just like, you know, having all these sitting on my desk this week. Well, I got them yesterday. I don't know, the day before. And I've been having a bit of a time with work, like not a good time, the kind of time you don't want to have. So these have been really calming to just reach out and kind of touch or just hold on to if I'm, you know, feeling not good. And I really think like I had not a great day Wednesday, really not great day yesterday. And today I was feeling pretty good. And I mean, I don't want to attribute it all to the rocks, but like, I really do feel like, I don't know, especially holding the selenite, it's really helping. Like it's, I feel very calm, positive, like not a care in the world, you know, that kind of feeling. So that's been super fun to just like hold them. But I will also, once I get my black tourmaline, I will do this experiment too, because I can't wait. I will try it.
So have you had pieces of selenite before?
No, this is my first piece of selenite.
Ooh. It's got a zing to it. It definitely has like it has a very, I've said before, sort of a celestial or a lunar sort of flavor.
Well, it looks like a tower to the heavens, does it not? It does. I mean, it's like, it's just this beautiful, like imagine like a beautiful round ice mountain. That's what it looks like to me and what it feels like. Like we're just crawling up a mountain to see, I don't know, Gandalf, somebody.
It does have wizardy sort of learned
right
occult arts. Like it's very got it like a sort of like the ivory tower, like we use that expression.
Yes.
But to me that fits selenite as well, this idea of it being like the pursuit of knowledge as sort of like a moral exercise in open-mindedness and interacting with the world in an altruistic way by being open to learning.
That's, I love that. Yes. Well, yeah, I really, it was very exciting to get some of these things that we talked about. So I will share when I get my black tourmaline, I will share next time on my experiments. I will try it. Let's see. Well, we're here to talk about what you've been doing. You did a big thing.
I did a thing. So last weekend I went to Interfuse, which is a burn that takes place in Missouri. So it's about 8 hours from me. I drove to Tulsa and then caravaned with some of my campmates the next day. So I broke it up into two legs.
Since I lived in Missouri, can I ask where it is in Missouri?
Waynesville? Waynes something? Does that sound
okay?
Right?
Maybe. I don't know
my Missouri.
Okay, I'll look it up.
Geography.
I mean, fuck that. All right, so.
But it was pleasant because it was quite a bit cooler than it is here. So it was like mid-70s as the highs. And then in the evenings, it would, like after the sun started setting, it'd be like in the 60s. And then late at night, it would get a little bit cooler, like lower 50s, like 49 maybe is the coldest, but that would be like in really late. So you're either dancing your face off and you're hot, or you are bundled up and sleeping and then you don't mind.
Well, so, all right. So tell us about this particular burn and what the theme was.
Okay, well, so just first things first, it's a regional burn. So when I say it's a burn or it's burners or whatever, I'm talking about the culture of Burning Man. The big one is, of course, out in the desert in Nevada. And that is huge. It's, you know, over 30,000 people. It's been going on for decades. Regional burns would be burns that are happening with the same sort of aesthetic and ethos, the ethos literally being a set of 10 principles that all burns are supposed to kind of embody.
And I don't know these principles. Will you tell me the principles?
Yes, I will tell you the principles. Let me look them up in the order that they normally go in.
No problem. This is very exciting. I didn't know there were principles, but that I like that. That makes me think that at least there is some sort of outline,
right? Well, I mean, in contrast to other things that maybe have a similar aesthetic or similar activities, it is a multi-day festival, usually with like tent or RV camping, and so it would be similar maybe to like Coachella or Bonnaroo in the sense that people plan on going all weekend. They wear costumes, being expressive is a big part of it, listening to music, staying up all night, possibly doing recreational things, mind-altering substances. But the difference between that and Burning Man is there is music, usually DJs, but sometimes there's live music. But I would say it's kind of more like an arts festival, sort of. It's more about creating large public pieces of art, or even like things as small as like an interaction that you're doing with somebody, or your costume, or creating a scene, or creating an interaction, or creating gifts or serendipitous things for people to engage with.
Like
so,
performance art.
Right? The idea is that no one should be a tourist. You should either be volunteering. Lots of people do stuff like doing trash pickup or like doing ticketing at the gate or being a ranger, sort of people that, because, you know, people kind of getting silly. You don't want like a huge police presence there. So having sort of a community,
like a crisis intervention group.
Yeah. And so and they have people, specific groups of rangers that, for example, are really good at dealing with medical emergencies that might deal with people being dehydrated or drunk or on a drug that they didn't mean to be taking or something like that. Or right. they just are freaking out and not having a good time. As opposed to law enforcement, which would maybe not approach it from like sort of a counseling, getting the person that is out of sorts care, as opposed to like just getting them out of there. So,
yeah. One question. But, can I ask a question? When you said ticketing, can you go back to that? Because I was not aware that there were tickets for these events.
Right. Well, so because of the nature of the event, wanting to have people be pretty free to do things and dress how they want and, you know, have partial or full nudity or, you know, the sound. Usually there's like music playing 24 hours. So to secure sites that will let you do this and insure you, usually there's like a ticket cost. Now, for regional burns, it's usually fairly minimal, especially considering you're camping. So you're not paying for, you're paying for travel to get there, but you're not really paying for a hotel or whatever, unless you've rented some kind of camping or RV equipment. But, that is an issue with the Big Burn because those tickets are over like $500. There are certain ways you can get advance tickets, or there's a limited pool of sort of discounted or financial aid sort of options. But in general, it's quite expensive to
is
go.
That like,
which
did it start out that way, though? No.
No.
Right?
Well, I mean, first of all, it started out much, much smaller. It was just people that would kind of like go out and like burn stuff and do pranks and party. And now it's kind of become this culture. And I would, this would be a whole other discussion, but I could identify like certain genres of performance or genres of, you know, circus or genres of music or styles of dress and things that would be very easily identifiable with burner culture specifically. Like it was originated and perpetuated by this group of people. But let me just give you the quick 10 principles, and I'll kind of get into, I'll explain them as I go along. So radical inclusion. Which tends to be part of the issue with like high ticket prices sometimes, because the idea is anyone can be part of Burning Man. There's no prerequisites to participate. Gifting is the other one. So it being a gifting culture makes it different. Some of the other events I go to, like Wasteland events, tend to be more barter related. But at Burning Man, it's a gifting culture, so you cannot be selling your wares. You can't be charging people for things. There's a few exceptions. So sometimes there will be a, like a commercial vendor that's selling like essentials like ice. Usually ice costs money, because otherwise there would be no way to like evenly distribute it to meet the demand.
Right.
But in general, everything else... meals are like a lot of different camps will offer meals or drinks. They'll offer services like massages or fortune telling or performances or anything you can think of, like a roller rink.
Oh, how fun.
Like
what?
Costumes, photographs, you know, like just anything people will like gift. And often, usually it's part of your camp will have something that's sort of a gift or an interaction, but you as an individual also. So lots of people bring like little trinkets or things that they made to give mm-hmm. to people that they interact with, but it doesn't okay. have to literally be a thing. It could be an experience or like one of my friends did a thing where she had this like plague mask and this whole outfit and made a sign and that said the secret keeper, and people would just approach her and like tell her a secret.
Oh my God.
And it was
I
like super
that.
Cathartic for them because she was completely silent. She's in this funky costume and like you're not getting any, you know, feedback in terms of her facial expression or even what she looks like or who she is, you know? And so it's just this very ephemeral moment that only she and these other individuals could share together. So stuff like that, that's like really unique where you're like, where
that's
else
amazing.
This
yeah.
just be a thing that happens, you know? Decommodification, which is sort of a parallel to the gifting, mm-hmm. but it has a little bit more to do. The decommodification has more kind of to do with the structure of the event as opposed to just the individual. So not having commercial sponsorships or advertising.
Yeah.
And also just the way you could kind of personally take responsibility for this principle would be, you know, not purposely trying to perpetuate consumer culture or like trying to show off name branded things like necessarily.
Yeah.
Obviously it's kind of impossible. You don't have to hide or block out every logo that's on the things that you have, but like, you know, not trying to introduce those things as part of your personality.
Right.
Radical self-reliance. So this is a big one for the Big Burn itself, because you're out in this alkaline desert that has no water and is super, super hot. And
bring your own shit.
Yeah. So it's like you are responsible for not dying out in the desert. The kind of counterpoint to that is,
sorry, I almost did a spit take, holy shit, but it's true, like nobody's gonna save you,
right? Well, I mean, if you, and this is a problem at the Big Burn because the conditions are so extremely hostile compared to some of these other the regional burns, but also because you at the same time have, because it's such a big deal and it's so well known, you have people that sort of are attracted to the tourist element of it that want to think that they're just going to a rave and are going to be running around like tripping their balls off and they'll be fine. And it's like you could literally get dehydrated and die.
It's
or
hot
get
as
lost
fuck out there.
Out on the plot. Well, I mean, you at all times you need to have water and a gas mask or a dust mask. And goggles, because if you get in a whiteout, like, and lights on you at even during the day, because if there's a whiteout, it might help you. So that's a big part of it, especially for the Big Burn and camping. And then radical self-expression, which is my favorite.
Yes.
So, and it kind of ties back into a lot of the other elements. So to me, radical self-expression can kind of be part of gifting. So your expression, like, you know, creating an art piece that is what you're wearing or what you're performing or how you're interacting with other people or things like that can be part of your gifting. Communal effort, so cooperation, collaboration. So a big part of it is the social aspect and, sort of doing things as a group. Civic responsibility kind of leaves it overlaps with a lot of these other things to do with, radical inclusion, communal effort. Leave no trace is a big one. And it is especially important at the Big Burn because that is public land. That is the habitat for a very specific type of like krill shrimp that lives out on the. So long story short is you really cannot leave any kind of trash out there.
That's awesome.
And there are teams of people in each camp that are constantly checking for trash. And then people who actually donate their time after the burn to literally sift through the playa dust to make sure that there isn't. We call it MOOP, which stands for matter out of place. It's kind of some dorky lingo. But yeah, so really extreme, leaving no trace, being eco-friendly, not doing like a, you know, Woodstock in the 60s where it's peace, love, and happiness, and then the place is trashed after.
Yeah, that's great. That's really cool.
And it really
hardcore.
Is
hardcore.
Yes. And it really is imperative for the Big Burn because, like I said, it's public land that is a protected biome. So, yeah. You know, ashing your cigarettes or like peeing out there, like literally like having glitter and feathers and stuff falling off your costumes. All these things are considered moop. So really, really important to leave no trace, not burning things like physically on the ground, but like being able. So all of
do
that.
Do people think about that when they plan like their costumes and stuff? Do they think about
yes.
that?
Yes. And okay. also in terms of what materials your camp is using for things. If you're burning an effigy or a building or something, obviously it needs to burn clean. And also you gotta, anything that you bring in, you have to take out with you. So if you're producing trash, like you have to haul that trash out by yourself, and you cannot just leave it in a parking lot in outside of town.
No.
When you get to like the nearest semblance of civilization, like that does not count as leaving no trace. At regional burns, it's a little different because it's usually not so completely out in the middle of nowhere, and it's the environmental impact is maybe less apparent because you're not sure. like in a like environment that looks like the moon. So it's really obvious if something's not supposed to fucking be there.
Right.
And they're also, you know, usually held at like campgrounds or places where people are there year round. So there is the chance that there's like stuff that was there before you. But anyway, so that's a unique thing about it that is continues to be controversial because, of course, how do you leave no trace when you've got entire camps that are using, you know, fossil fuels for their generators, for example?
Right.
Like, can you truly leave no trace if you are generating carbon emissions, things like that? So these are always things that are constantly getting refined and are being addressed and continue to evolve. The other one is participation. So this kind of has to do with sort of the gifting, communal, radical self-expression sort of vibe, but like the idea that it's not like a concert where you go and are an observer. It's like everyone and everything is meant to be interacted with, in certain contexts, not just at all times, always in any way, right. But like the idea that you yourself are a participant. You can't just like show up and be a tourist and just like observe. Like there's not some kind of VIP box anywhere where you get to just like people watch or whatever, or it shouldn't be that way.
Right.
And the last one is immediacy. So, that's kind of just like a good pointer for like how to not have massive FOMO and like how to get over your own shit about participating or your own shit about radical self-expression or radical self-reliance or any of that. It's this idea of like you're sort of in this suspended world that is different than the default world. And so the idea of immediacy, so not necessarily just being like fuck it whatever, but you know, the idea of really trying to experience it. To me, that's
gonna
a big
say
part
does
of
that cut down on all the like the selfie taking and the video taking or like
Yeah,
I would
well,
think there would be less
the,
of
the
that.
The participation just, element too is like,
yeah,
you're here to be here. You're not here to be like
to performative or whatever, right?
And then the unofficial 11th one is consent, which again is something that's important in all contexts everywhere, but is especially important in an environment where people are dressed in crazy costumes or perhaps dressed revealingly. Or are under the influence. So, and someone mentioned to me when I was checking in at Interfuse, which I'm such a square that this wouldn't have even occurred to me, but they were like, consent includes substances. So don't offer anyone like any kind of food or drink or something that is psychoactive and not right. tell them. And I was like, oh shit, I like wouldn't have even like considered doing that to somebody right. and wouldn't yeah. have even thought that someone would do that to me. But obviously that is a big part of consent.
Yeah.
So yeah, so all things that are constantly should be checking in on and thinking about, and not to say that every burner at every burn is doing all these things well or at all, or that they can't be done better, but that is sort of the gist. So that is
it
what
sounds like. It sounds like it sets up a framework for everybody really to be, you know, to try and be respectful of the land, of the people, of the other people that are there. I don't know. It sounds like the principles are in principle sound like you'd want to do that because all those things are cool. You know right. what I mean?
And it definitely, it's a lot of these things go back to the big burn because it is so huge and it's getting so expensive and it does have a very large environmental impact and it does attract people that just want to sort of be tourists and like yeah. pay a bunch of money and just show up and like yeah. experience all the weird stuff and not interact with anyone or mm. like try to commodify the experience, like scalping tickets or selling goods and services while you're there, or you know, charging for lodging, or you know, any way that somebody could try to hijack this experience and like make a buck on it.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of like the gifting and decommodification and things like that are more of an issue to try to like, when there needs to be some kind of course correction to go back to this smaller burns. This is definitely a big part of it, but you can see how when it's on the scale of the big burn, which is like, you know, by like exponential factors bigger.
Yeah.
That
sure.
it can really become a problem with the people not participating or making a mess or being douchebags.
Yeah, it's a lot of people in a protected area.
Yes.
A lot of people.
So that's what makes it different than something that is for example, like a wasteland event. As I said, like there's a big kind of overlap with these groups, but in terms of sort of a role playing environment, obviously the wasteland is like more like you are in Mad Max or Fallout or something. So
right.
Instead of gifting, usually it's like kind of bartering, but honestly, like in principle, it's just kind of gifting. Like you're not expecting, yeah. you're not trying to actually like make a deal and bargain right. with people. Okay. So stuff like that. But that's what makes it different than other festivals or whatever. So this one is, I wish I knew the number of participants. I do know that the tickets sold out. But basically, this one's in a wooded sort of camp area. So there's like several kind of like large lawn areas.
Okay.
This particular campground has some like simple sort of like sort of picnic or public areas that certain camps can have access to if they apply ahead of time. And then, but most of the camps are stuff where people just brought all the structure and are creating the environment where they are staying and also interacting with everyone. And then there's several sort of gravel trails to get vehicles and walkable footpaths, and then there's just some kind of like winding trails and stuff, and it's wooded, so okay. it's very magical because like honestly out in the desert it is oppressively hot and desolate, and it's very striking in how like lunar and weird it is and stark.
Yeah,
but it is exhausting. Like, it's really not fun to be in the desert. Whereas walking yeah. around in the woods during
Delightful.
The day or in the evening when it is, like, a pleasant, like, 50 to 70-something degrees,
Perfect.
It's great. Feels great. It's
feels
wonderful.
Great. It's not like you're going to die. The element of risk, though. So, all right. Explain to me. So, if you are doing it like a performance or, you know, some kind of like large structure or something, is that in a certain place or is it within your camp?
So there are usually two structures at every burn. There is the man or the effigy, which is where the name Burning Man comes from, is that you make a big right. man and then you burn it. And it's very symbolic of sort of countercultural, sort of Dadaist, surrealist, folk horror, a lot of different things about burning an effigy and burning a man, you know? So,
yes.
But in general, it sort of represents this sort of hedonistic ritual that everyone participates in that sort of signifies a lot of these principles. So immediacy and leaving your trace and participation and sort of it being this otherworldly experience of like burning your, at least temporarily, your ties to like the default world and capitalism and things like that.
Yep.
So anyway, and then usually there's also a temple. This particular one doesn't usually do a, they've had a temple a few times, but that's not always, but it's usually, so it's usually a wooden structure that gets erected right off the bat and is there all week. And then usually on the last night, or the second to last night, it burns and everyone goes and watches it burn, and it's
okay,
very magical and cathartic. So that's the other thing.
Is it, but is it for a part, like, does something happen in it? Or no. Is it just a wooden structure that you're going to burn?
Well, usually it's something, obviously the one in Black Rock City is huge and you can like get up on it and stuff. This one, for example, at Interfuse was like 1.5 or 2 stories and it was like a little mushroom. So the mushroom is made of wood and you can actually climb up inside it and get in the mushroom part and stuff. So you can usually interact with them.
Okay.
Usually it tends to be sort of like a quiet meditative area, particularly the temple. But it is meant to be like a giant art piece that you can interact with in some way, like either get under it or get near it. And it's meant to be an object of contemplation.
Okay. That makes sense. All right.
But like then it. On top of that, you usually have the theme camps, and you know, there's some that have been that have dozens or hundreds of people in them, and they're pretty large, and usually they bring quite a lot of infrastructure or props or things. And then you have, you know, going down to smaller camps that are a little more informal. Maybe they just have a bar or music, or like this one camp just had little kiddie pools full of bubble liquid, and then they had on large dowels, they had different arrangements of like nets and loops and things, so you can make big bubbles of different sizes.
Awesome.
And just, so we were just like dorking around, like trying to figure, because the one that's just the one big loop to make one really big bubble was like super hard, because if you don't open it but then start closing it, it will get too big and pop, and you won't be able to, like, you won't have enough soap to like close it. But
right.
Then there were other ones that were like kind of like big fat fishing nets, and you could get a bunch of bubbles that, like, it was just silly. Like, you know, it's
but
just,
you
like,
know what? That's the whole, like, I love things like this, and especially like I like hearing about it. But I think just like the concept of being an adult and doing childlike things is great. Like, everybody should do more of that shit. Like, find the wonder and joy in something as simple as blowing some fucking bubbles. That's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, and that's totally the point. Like, doing these fun little interactions that you just couldn't do anywhere. Or you could, but like in the normal default world, like, you don't take the time to savor it. Like, why would,
right.
I mean, I absolutely could go get a kiddie pool and fill it full of bubbles, but normally I would not, I would be like, this is a waste of my time, you know?
Well, if
but
it's
like,
only
it's not,
you
it,
too, you know,
of
it's
kind of
like, you can, what are you going to invite all your friends and their friends to come over? Yeah, I know. It's easier done at a thing where that is the, like, that's the vibe. But anyway.
But some of the other interactions that people had were, one camp made these small little spaces that would probably be, they just made these like little plywood cubes with doors on them that I would say are like maybe about like 6 or 8 feet square and tall. And they had one that had like trippy colored wallpaper. So when you get in it and it's like seamless and papered on like all 6 surfaces, you know, it's just kind of weird and trippy. And they had another one that was like an old, like, kind of kids' room fort that had like a little old timey record player and like some blankets and stuffed animals, and like you could just curl up in there, like things like that. Like just, and the other thing that's really fascinating to me as someone who's fairly creative and throws parties, and it's always interesting to see how people figure out the most like cost effective and waste efficient way to bring these things. So
yeah, for sure.
You know, like the cost of creating like a little 6x6 room is not high. Obviously you can pack it flat to get it there. You could burn it, so it's all like, you know, biodegradable materials, or you could reuse it, you could save it and bring it to other events and things. And it doesn't really involve like super intense or complicated to use tools to assemble. Obviously the bubbles and everything, that's all like dollar store stuff you could get.
Right.
So, but then of course you have things that are these amazing, beautiful art structures that people build that, you know, have used like upcycled materials or something, but are still like an enormous labor of love and like incredibly detailed and takes teams of dozens and dozens of people to assemble. So I mean, it's just a little bit of everything. And then like I said, you have people sort of doing individual things, just interacting or having cool costumes, or, and then you have sound camps, so people that are doing like music and DJs or events or games or things like that. So does that kind of explain what it all is?
Yeah. It's like well, I mean, there's nothing really to compare something like this to, but it's like a giant performance art camping time.
Yes,
to me, basically. Like that sounds amazing and so fun. And also like not for the faint of heart. Like if it is part of the tenet to be participatory, like don't just show up and mope around. Not saying that there's a lot of people that don't, but like you're part of it, man.
No, there's definitely like times where, especially at the Big Burn, because it's so big and overwhelming and long that like you might go and like wander around by yourself and have a cry. You know, like that's cool. Yeah. That's part of it, too.
That could be performance. That's a thing.
Yeah. The immediacy and radical self-expression and all of that doesn't necessarily have to be like shiny, happy.
Right.
Having a good time with everybody all the time.
Exactly.
So
do you want to talk about like what this one's theme was and like some of the coolest shit you saw?
Yes.
Or some of the things that you did? I don't know. I just want to know. I want to know from start to finish.
Yeah. Well, I haven't been to a regional burn. I've been to some wasteland events that are kind of similar in scale and landscape, and that they're not out in the desert.
Right.
I would say that I enjoyed this probably as much or more as I enjoyed the Renegade Burn. Because honestly, to me, the Big Burn is so big and the desert environment is so oppressive.
It's very far from me.
You know, Nevada is quite a haul. But so a regional burn to me is kind of like the best of both worlds, where you don't necessarily have these huge, giant art installations, but on the other hand, there's less FOMO. There's more of a sense of community.
Yeah, it feels like more personal almost. So
all of that, and then my group. Basically, the reason why I went is because the theme was awesome. It was Through the Mushroom Ring.
Amazing.
Which sounds delightful. Sometimes they're like very esoteric. Like there's like sunburn coming up is like, it's like lunar dust is the theme.
All right. Where is sunburn? Tell me.
Or like the theme for the Big Burn last year was like waking dreams.
Well, that could be anything.
Okay. But like Through the Mushroom Ring, there's like so much to work with there. Like mushrooms, fairies, for sure. Forest stuff. Maybe kind of Alice in Wonderland. Like, there's a lot of directions you could go. So two of my friends were like, well, let's make ridiculous mushroom hats and run around being silly mushrooms. And we're like the traveling mushroom ring. And we like interact with people as a little gang of mushrooms accosting people. And I was like, wait, you want me to make a totally ridiculous, impractical outfit and run around and be a weirdo? Okay.
Sold.
I'm in. Give me a design challenge and I will. So my I got really excited to be an Inky Cat Mushroom, but my outfits would be pastel goth, which is a different look for me. So I made this giant fucking hat. Like, when I was packing my car, like, before I needed to leave, I was like, I hope this actually fits in my car.
Yeah, I don't know that you measured, did you?
It was, like, stupid big. So we all had, a bunch of us had silly hats, and we were actually in, like, a, sort of a free camping area, but we ended up sort of mushing all of our stuff together, and we had several pop-ups. So we had kind of, like, a public area and where we were serving drinks and things, and then we sort of had, like, a back area where we had more chairs and lights and like a fire pit that was sort of like the group communal area.
Yeah.
And it was hilarious because one of my friends made this sign that was just like kind of wonky lettering that goes, is this a bar? Question mark. Because we're not like an official camp, but like, that's fine. You can do whatever you want. And so then every single night as I was falling asleep, I would just hear people outside being like, is this a bar? Is this a bar? Is this a bar?
I love it.
Is this a bar? Is this a bar? So anyway, that was kind of the inside joke of the weekend.
I like it.
But yeah, for me, I'm mostly excited about costumes. Yes. Oh, and then my gift that I made was like very low cost and very simple, but people actually really thought it was cool. So good for me. Mm. But I got seed paper. So it's just like, you know, kind of like a textured off-white, rough-hewn kind of raw paper, but it's got tiny little wildflower seeds embedded in it. Yes. And you can just run it through your printer. And so I made a little design that looked like the Monopoly get out of jail free cards with the little Monopoly man. But I made one where he's in a little mushroom ring and it says get out of fairy free, like instead of get out of jail. And the normal card says something like keep in your hand or until it's sold. So mine was like, you know, you can keep it until it's used or plant in the ground. So as I would hand them out to people, I'd be like, this is in case you get trapped in a mushroom ring or by the fairies, you can get out. Or you can plant it in the ground and have wildflowers. And like people were just like really amazed by that. But that's like so other cool. people were, you know, they have like snacks or treats, stickers or like homemade like jewelry or keychains. One of my campmates does macrame, and so she made these little macrame mushrooms. One of my other friends got like little wee tiny glass bottles and made like little wee tiny fake mushrooms and like got moss and made these itty bitty wee like little terrarium necklaces.
Oh my, so tiny.
So labor intensive, yeah. So,
wow. That's a lot. People really put a lot of effort into this kind of stuff. Because you were planning, like, what, a couple of months ago, right?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah. So, okay. So, what was your favorite thing?
Oh, my God. It's not really my favorite thing. But so, last year, when my friend broke her arm, like, the first night there. And it was because there's a camp that's called Tramp Camp. And they have two trampolines. And then they also had a ball pit, and for some reason they put the ball pit in between, and she dove from the trampoline into the ball pit, thinking that the ball pit was deeper than it was, and it was not, and broke her arm.
No.
So she was like, we got to go back, and I gotta do the ball pit again and not break my arm. And so we're talking to a woman who's like with the camp, and she was like, oh no, we can't have the ball pit next to the trampoline, because this girl broke her fucking arm last year, and I just scream, it was this girl! This fucking girl broke her arm!
Oh my God, hilarious. Did everybody bust out laughing? Oh
yes, it was very funny. But one of the other things that happened that I really liked is one of these other bars that actually was doing, like, totally random, because usually the music is, like, EDM, like, house, trance, electronic music.
Right.
But they would do a metal hour at like 1 a.m. And they would also do metal like other parts of the day. They were playing like a bunch of stuff, like a bunch of White Zombie. And I was like, hell yeah. But for some reason, they made these little like little art pieces, like little kind of like snow globe size, like little ornaments with like little gnomes and elves and mushrooms and lights and stuff in them. And they like squirreled them about the campgrounds, and I spotted one, and then it had like a little note on it with like the little gnome in it being like, oh, hey, I got lost. Return me to the Velvet Barnacle and we can drink about it. And so I went, and like, they'll give you like a little prize or, you
how
know,
cool.
So, oh, so sort of like little quests in a way yeah. that you can go do. That was really fun. I enjoyed that. The bubbles was super fun.
Yeah.
I did.
And how long is it? Is it like 3 days or two?
Yeah, it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Okay. All right.
So, yeah. So that was really fun. There was a lot of really good dancing. There was one club that, or club, it's not really a club. There was a camp that had, so they were sort of in one of the back wooded areas. So you kind of go around this like curvy little, trail that sort of pops out in the back. Mm-hmm. And, they had like sort of a two pole circus tent kind of set up. So it wasn't huge. Yeah. But then they had this tunnel that they had made to get into it. So you couldn't really see the tent from the outside. And okay. then there was like this like little sort of like vaginal tunnel of like glitter. And like, so you, and then you would emerge into this tent where they were like having a dance party.
That's
so it's just
so
kind
cool.
of magical because it was like, I didn't even know this was back here. So stuff like that. So we spent, there were several camps that had really cute decor, like little mushrooms. There was a camp that had made these really big mushrooms out of basically like chicken wire and like spray expanding foam, like insulation oh. foam, and then had painted them.
Oh, fun.
A lot of cool like lighting effects and things.
Would you say like, is it in the thousands?
Yes. Yes.
Okay. I'm trying to get a scope, like a, just a, like a, you know, size in my head about how big this is. Like, say I know how big Scarborough Fair is. Is it bigger than that?
No, I'd say it's probably maybe about that size. Yeah.
Okay.
Maybe a little
that's
bit
a pretty good
than
size.
That, 'cause that's pretty densely packed together.
Yeah.
But yeah, that would be kind of the scale perhaps. Probably
okay. All right. Yeah, I'll
but I feel like I kind of got way off on sort of just describing what this event is and not really actually getting to what we were going to talk about, which is one, all the cool outfits and things that I made and like being a little mushroom creepy baby with my friends and that sort of being a magical experience in the woods. But also I, for our camp, did a little ritual invoking the mushroom goddess. So I would like to next time, since we have filled almost an hour, talk about the ritual itself and maybe just kind of read through it and talk a little bit about it. And then if I have time, I'd want to talk about some of my impressions of working with mushrooms or the experience of dressing up like one or just being in an environment where that is the theme and in a very sort of magical, surreal sort of setting as a act of magic or as a witchcraft practice. So
I
yeah,
want
thank
to
you
hear
for
all about that.
Letting
yeah.
me do a rant. I hope that made mostly sense and you could get a feel for what exactly this environment I'm talking about is and what the vibe is. So,
yeah, absolutely. I really do. I feel like I know a lot more than I did coming in, and I can't wait to hear about your ritual, because I remember when we did the episode about your wasteland ritual, and that was really, really amazing. So this sounds even more, I don't know, just like, just the theme alone, the mushroom goddess. I can't wait. It's going to be really cool. We'll talk about that next time.
Yeah.
All right. Well, until then,
hocus,
hocus, hocus,
bitches.
Hocus, bitches.